I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. My guest is Leah Buskey, founder of TaskRabbit, an online service that allows users to outsource small tasks to individuals known as TaskRabbits. These TaskRabbits are freelance workers who have been background checked, and they perform small jobs ranging from grocery shopping to furniture assembly. Leah started the company in 2008, and the service is available in major cities, including Boston, Seattle, and San Francisco. Leah is a software engineer who formerly worked at IBM. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Jessica.
Before we get started on the history of the company, I'd love to know in more detail how TaskRabbit works. Let's say I need my computer repaired.
So it's really simple. Anyone can go online or pick up their iPhone and use their iPhone app, Android as well, and you post that you need help with some computer repair. You can either name the price you're willing to pay, or you can put that job out to bid. At that time, the TaskRabbits in our network are real-time alerted, typically via their mobile phones as well. They log on to the site and get connected and help you out.
The ages of these TaskRabbits range from, 20 years old to close to 80 years old. What's an example of an older TaskRabbit?
It's funny. When I started TaskRabbit back in Boston, I thought, Boston's a great college town. I'm going to get all these students that want to become TaskRabbits running around the city. And that actually was never the case. As an example, over 25% of our TaskRabbit community is part of the retired workforce. I personally had a TaskRabbit named Margaret out of San Francisco pick me up at 2 in the morning from a U2 concert that was in Oakland and drive me back home because I didn't have a car out there and I had gone out with some friends and couldn't get back to San Mateo. And it was funny because I was chatting with her on the way home, 2 in the morning, and she said, I don't sleep well. I'm really a night owl. And so being able to pick up jobs like this is perfect for me.
Can you provide some more examples of tasks? You mentioned the U2 concert, this woman picking you up. But what is a spectrum of tasks that you've experienced?
There's a wide variety of tasks that are posted, but by far the most popular for us are around deliveries. Things like grocery delivery, food delivery, picking up packages, courier-type services around town have been hugely popular. The other thing for our small and medium-sized business customers, it's our fastest-growing segment right now. They're utilizing TaskRabbit to find assistants and office managers.
What about on the more personal front?
So one of my favorite stories has to do with a mother located in San Francisco who has a 20-year-old son living in Boston. And unfortunately, her son was going through chemotherapy treatment at Mass General Hospital, and she couldn't fly out there to be with him at the time. So she went on the TaskRabbit website, posted a task to find someone in Boston to go visit her son every day in the hospital for a week, to bring him a healthy meal and a cozy blanket, and to sit with him for 30 minutes every single day, and then call her afterwards to give her the update. And the TaskRabbit that picked up the job in Boston was actually another mom. So the bond that these two moms formed across the country was just incredible and really proves that what we've built goes far beyond just task jobs and errands. It's really redefining who your neighbors are and who you can rely on.
Even though many of the jobs take place in one's neighborhood, they can be done virtually or from one city to another.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I've used it once. My husband and I were looking for an older dog, and we posted the task on TaskRabbit, and we ended up working with this lawyer who was in between jobs.
Particularly, in the early days, I was surprised by the folks that were in between work. I had lawyers, I had pharmacists, I had teachers that were coming to the TaskRabbit platform. And that actually has held true even as the economy has improved.
Could you provide some more examples of even, quirky tasks that you've seen?
People get really creative. We had someone post that they wanted help pranking their office mate. So they had the TaskRabbit wrap this person's desk and chairs and pens and pencils, everything in cellophane.
Where was that? What city?
This was in Boston. There's another one more recently in San Francisco where I don't know why, but this person had one of those rubber chickens that sort of hang, and they wanted a tuxedo made
for the
rubber chicken.
You do background checks on your freelance workers who become your task rabbits, and you place their photo on the site so users can choose based on many criteria, including, you know, maybe does this person look friendly and does this person look trustworthy? How important do you think the photos were in those choices?
Incredibly important. I mean, people look at these profiles and they think, would I want to let this person into my grandmother's house? And we hear that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so it does make a huge difference. And we're even now allowing TaskRabbits to upload introductory videos about themselves to their profiles just to make it more interactive and more engaging. And it just helps with that trust level.
How much do you monitor the tasks that are posted? You know, some people might post illicit tasks.
So a couple of things. One is that we're a self-policing community, meaning anyone can flag a task as inappropriate, and that happens sometimes. We recently saw a task get flagged as inappropriate because someone had posted they wanted a task rabbit to complete their online driving school.
Hmm.
you know, and the other thing that provides a barrier for people is that we do ask for credit card information up front. We don't charge for your task until it's actually completed and done. But it does provide a little bit of a barrier for people that are just looking to kind of spam the site or get away with something that's more fraudulent.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Leah Buskey, founder of TaskRabbit, a website and mobile app that allows users to outsource small tasks to individuals known as TaskRabbits. Prior to launching TaskRabbit, you were a software engineer at IBM, and your interest in computer science stems back to high school, mm-hmm. Where your boyfriend introduced you to computers, your boyfriend, now your husband, Kevin Buskey. Can you describe your first exposure with him to computers?
So Kevin and I are high school sweethearts. We started dating in high school. We went to both junior and senior prom together. But we would spend Friday nights at his house building computers. We would go to computer shows on the weekends and pick out motherboards and bus systems and then spend a Friday night, you know, putting them together. And so I immediately became fascinated with what was involved in doing that. And that really influenced me later as I went on to college and sort of inspired me to take some computer courses.
What was your first computer in your house?
It was a Gateway. I think it was Gateway 2000 or 3000, one of those. But Kevin was the one that actually went with my family to the Gateway store and helped us pick out our first computer.
I heard somewhere that Kevin built a computer for you. Is that accurate?
He did, yes. The computer I lugged with me to Sweetbriar College in Virginia is the computer he built for me. And we picked out the parts together. He put it together for me, and that was the computer I used all through college.
You grew up in Massachusetts, about an hour west of Boston, and you attended the local high school together. Why did you decide to go to rural Virginia, Sweetbriar College?
Great question. You know, it's the only school that I applied to outside of New England. It was the only women's college I applied to. I never thought I would end up there. But my mom and I, we took a road trip one weekend for accepted applicants weekend, and we drove down to Virginia. We drove onto the Sweetbriar campus, and I just immediately fell in love with it. And it was a small school, 600 students. The student-teacher ratio was something like 7 to 1. So you couldn't hide there.
How many other women were computer science and math majors? Because you were a dual major.
I was a dual major in math and computer science, and it was a small program. I think in my graduating class, there may be 5 of us that were in that math and or computer science program.
Was there one or two pivotal projects that you worked on that really helped you sink your teeth into software engineering that you can remember?
Yeah, there was definitely this one project. It was for an operating systems class. And what we built was this little robot that you could move around the screen using the keyboard. The fact that I could code something in this language, this computer language, and I could translate that into a product that people could interact with was really exciting. And it was just this this JPEG of a robot moving around the screen based on keyboard strokes. But I ran back to my dorm room, and I showed my roommates what I had built with this little robot. They thought I was crazy, but I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And for me, that project was just the start of, I have all these ideas in my head and things that I want to build, and I can do that.
Incidentally, going back to your childhood, what did your parents do?
My father recently retired from the Air Force. He was a civilian in the Air Force for over 30 years, and he worked at Hanscom Air Force Base. One division that he was in for a long time, the Electronic Systems Center, dealt with all the training programs across Hanscom Air Force Base.
You had an interest and have an interest in space. Is that somewhat linked to this Air Force?
I think so. It absolutely came from my dad. And I remember ever since I was a little girl, I've always wanted to become an astronaut. And still to this day, I would love to go to space. You know, my dad had a big influence on both my sister and I, and we were really into science fiction, and we watched all the Star Treks together every night. And so it's just something that has always fascinated me.
You also were very serious about dance growing up. You thought at one point you might want to be a classical ballerina.
That's true. And in fact, I chose the college I went to based on their dance program, primarily. A lot of my friends went on to dance in professional ballet companies, and something that has always been a part of my life.
After graduating from college, you worked at a startup in Boston called Iris Associates. And Kevin, your then boyfriend, was also in Boston. He was also working in computer programming. Iris ultimately developed Lotus Notes, and the company Iris was sold to Lotus. Can you remind people or explain to people what Lotus Notes did?
Lotus Notes is kind of like Microsoft Outlook. Hundreds of thousands of people around the globe still run on Lotus Notes and Domino. It's an incredibly stable and robust collaboration platform.
And IBM ultimately acquired Iris, or Lotus.
That's true, yes. Lotus bought Iris, and then IBM bought Lotus, and we sort of all got merged into IBM.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Leah Buskey, founder of TaskRabbit. We'll hear more from Leah coming up. I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. My guest is Leah Buskey, founder of TaskRabbit, an online service that allows users to outsource small tasks to individuals known as TaskRabbits. Leah started the company in 2008, and the service is available in major cities, including Boston, Seattle, and San Francisco. Leah is a software engineer who formerly worked at IBM. I've heard you mention that you felt a lot of pressure to write very solid code when you were at Iris or at IBM that was free of bugs, because you would introduce products really on a 2-year interval. How much did that inform your programming going forward?
Yeah, it was a huge influence. You know, when you're on an 18 to 24 month software life cycle and the code that you check in that day isn't going to be actually seen by customers for a couple years, you really have to make sure that it's solid. Because at the time, you know, we're packaging up CDs, boxing them, and mailing them around the globe. There's no quick fixes, there's no quick patches that you can send out if you've really broken something. And so the culture at Iris was very hardcore into quality. And every morning, I remember there was this big build room. If you checked in code that broke the build for the day, it was not a good thing. Mm. It was really embarrassing. You'd have to go down to the build room, you'd have to put a dollar in the jar, and you'd have to sit there and debug it with the release engineers. And so it was a big deal. Nowadays, everything has changed. We at TaskRabbit push code every day, if not multiple times a day. But we definitely have been influenced by the high quality and high standards that is just in our DNA.
So going back to IBM, how much were you itching to start your own project while you were at IBM?
You know, in the early days that I was there, I was incredibly happy and saw a long career for myself there. I spent 7 years there as a programmer, and I'd say the last couple years I started to kind of pick my head up and look around and think about what else might be out there. So I remember at IBM every year we had this conference called Lotusphere, and it was the one time a year that they let the developers and the engineers go out and talk to customers. And I loved interacting with the customers. And for me, that was the most fun part of my job. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I wanted to find something where I could have more interaction externally.
Now, your husband was also at IBM for a while before he left to work at a couple startups in Boston. Did you just both end up at IBM coincidentally?
Well, his father also works at IBM. Mm-hmm. And so when we graduated from college, me with a computer science degree, Kevin had actually been working as an intern there throughout the whole time. And so his father was able to kind of get me in the door, too. And the three of us were there. And then we also met Brian Leonard, who is our lead architect at TaskRabbit, when he was at IBM.
How ultimately did you decide on TaskRabbit?
You know, we had the idea for TaskRabbit one night, my husband and I, when we were sitting at home, we're getting ready to go out to dinner, and we realized that we were out of dog food. And at the time, we had this 100-pound yellow lab named Kobe that we kept very well fed. And we thought, wouldn't it be nice if there's just a place online we could go, say we needed dog food, name the price we're willing to pay. We're certain that there was someone in our neighborhood that'd be willing to help us out. Maybe even someone at the store at that very second. It was just a matter of connecting with them. 4 months after that night is when I decided to quit IBM to build the first version of the site. And I thought, I know how to build this. I don't know what comes after that, but I'm just going to go build it and see what happens.
Incidentally, when you came up with the idea that night, you quickly acquired the URL runmyerrand.com, which was the precursor name.
That is true. And so we took that as a sign, actually, the fact that domain names are never available these days. That was the first domain name I looked up, and it was available, and I bought it on the spot. But 20 minutes later, I hated it, and I knew that I would have to change the name at some point, and we did about 18 months later.
Now, you had been at IBM in the stable job where Kevin had gone on to work at a few startups, and you were the breadwinner for a couple of years. How did you decide to switch now that you had left and to start this company?
Yeah, it was a very intense and stressful time, to be honest. We decided that we had about, you know, 6 months in the bank. I cashed out my pension from IBM and used that to fund the initial stages of the company. And so we sort of started the clock. And that was in June of 2008. And we said, you know what, by the end of the year, something has to happen. 6 months went by, and I was really close to being able to raise a seed round of funding, but this was the end of 2008 when no one was raising money, no one was writing checks, the stock market had just crashed. It was very stressful. But 3 months later, it took 9 months total, I was able to raise a small seed from two angel investors in Boston that really allowed us to keep going.
How were you introduced to them, given that you had no interaction with the venture community prior?
So the way I was introduced to Peter Aldrich and Jill Priotto, they were the two that led a small seed round of investment, $150,000. So Scott Griffith was the one who introduced me to Jill and Peter. Scott, at the time, was the CEO of Zipcar. He and I met through a friend of a friend of a friend, told him about TaskRabbit over a 30-minute meeting in his office, and we just really hit it off. Mm-hmm. He came on as an advisor and as a mentor to me, even incubated me and TaskRabbit in his office for the first year that we existed for free.
At Zipcar.
At Zipcar, yeah.
Zipcar, by the way, is the car sharing service where you're in any city, you could rent a Zipcar and drop it off at another location where you end up. Basically.
Exactly, yeah. And so Scott really kind of took me under his wing and helped me learn about how to pitch investors and how to raise money and what I needed to do. And he introduced me to Jill and Peter. And then later that year, I raised the larger seed round, $1.8 million that came from Silicon Valley seed investors.
What exactly were you building? Were you building the website?
I was. So I left IBM in June. Basically locked myself in my house for 10 weeks straight, and all I did was code, and got the first version of TaskRabbit, at the time Run My Errand, launched in Boston in September of 2008. I had about 100 users, I had about 30 TaskRabbits, and they were interacting on the platform.
Were most of these people your friends, or how did you cultivate interest?
Yeah, I remember the very first task that was posted by someone I didn't know was very exciting, and it was to return a tuxedo that they had rented for a wedding. They paid one of my founding TaskRabbits in Boston $10 to do it, and it went off without a hitch. So that was a neat moment for me to think about. Early on, we launched in just one neighborhood of Boston, Charlestown. And that's where I really focused my marketing efforts and the word of mouth efforts, and launched specifically with the Charlestown Mothers Organization, who I had interacted with and who were really excited about trying the service out.
Was there a catalyst for you that caused the floodgates to open in terms of user adoption? What was it?
You know, once I really engaged with the Charlestown Mothers Association, which was 600 moms in 1 square mile of Boston. But those moms started talking to the moms in Beacon Hill and Back Bay and Cambridge, and it started just to spread very organically via word of mouth. Then I was frantic to recruit more TaskRabbits all over the city, and it really snowballed from there.
Was your programming as solid as your Iris IBM days had trained you to be?
You know, I had never coded in Ruby on Rails before. I never coded for the web before.
What's Ruby on Rails?
Ruby on Rails is the programming language that TaskRabbit is built on. I had always coded in C++ and Java at IBM. And so this was a completely new programming language I had to learn. And so there was definitely a lot of trial and error there. And it's funny because 18 months after I built the first version of the site, we ended up throwing away all of my code. And just even a couple months ago, we erased the last line of code that I had originally built. And so, you know, those initial iterations were not scalable, but they worked. They got the product out there and they got people using it.
There weren't major crashes in the early days or?
No, I mean, I think that's a testament to just my training. That site never went down.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Leah Buskey, founder of TaskRabbit, a website and mobile app that allows users to outsource small tasks to individuals known as TaskRabbits. You've raised over $40 million in venture financing at this point. How much does that help you feel legitimized? What do you have to say about that?
You know, the first 2 to 3 years that we existed, we had no money. We were bootstrapped. We were dying to get our A round done, dying to get $5 million in the bank. And after we got that A round done, the B round, the C round, all those things came very easily. And so for me, I still operate like we have no money. And I think mentally that's a good thing. But it's because I've seen the market be so low and for it to be so hard to raise funds, when I had the opportunity to take on more funds, I took it, even though we didn't necessarily need it. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen how hard it can be, and I want to have the staying power that we're going to need to build a huge business that we have in front of us.
And this was after you did this Facebook incubator, where you were part of the first Facebook incubator class. I don't know if many people know that Facebook has an incubator. What was that experience like for you?
I think back on it, and it was like a startup boot camp. We were one of 25 companies invited to participate. The majority of the other companies were from the Bay Area already. We were the only ones from the East Coast that were kind of flying back and forth to participate. And at the time, Facebook Connect had just come out, was just launched. And so Facebook saw this as a way to engage with companies that were building interesting things on top of the social graph, on top of their platform, and how they could cultivate and encourage that.
And how much did that experience sort of actualize this concept for you? You were serious about it from the get-go, so perhaps you didn't need it to actually corroborate what you were doing.
You know what it did, though? It really opened up my eyes and the networking that was available in Silicon Valley for me, because I was from the East Coast. I had never even set foot in California before I did the Facebook Fund program. And so I remember landing for the first time in San Francisco, and I was kind of like, okay, here we go. I don't know what is in store for me.
Was there any discussion about Kevin potentially joining you and becoming a co-founder of TaskRabbit, your husband?
Yeah, so at the time, we were really bootstrapping our lives. Kevin was the big breadwinner, and we had a mortgage, and we ended up selling the house in Boston so that we could move to San Francisco. And so it wasn't until the company got a little bit bigger and we needed someone full-time to run the servers and do the infrastructure, which is what Kevin's an expert at, that he came on board.
There are several companies in this space, ranging from Skill Pages, which connects skilled workers with those who want to hire them, to Fiverr, where you pay somebody $5 to get you a latte, to companies that are helping business owners. How do you see this landscape evolving?
So I think it's a pretty exciting time, because 5 years ago, the technology did not exist to do what we're doing today. And that's why we're seeing all of these other companies pop up. The fact that we can leverage social networking, and we have real-time location data on mobile, and people walk around 24/7 with their smartphones, are all reasons why we're able to connect in real time to exchange services and to get things done. For TaskRabbit, our vision is to revolutionize the labor force on a global scale.
So what does that really mean?
It means that we're redefining how people think about work, how they find work. We really want to empower people to do what they love. We have people on the platform that are chefs, that are carpenters, that are handymen. We have people that have left their full-time jobs and are now doing TaskRabbit full-time.
What's the most that somebody has made on TaskRabbit?
We had a TaskRabbit just last month, actually, cash out $10,000 that they had made that month. They were doing 2 to 3 jobs a day. They have a big truck for hauling, which is something pretty unique in an urban environment. So their services were needed across the city quite frequently.
It's been said that you coined this term service networking, which essentially is using the internet to get off the internet. What is service networking?
So the idea of service networking really, for me, came out of the evolution of social networking.
Which is?
So Facebook has become very popular, Twitter as well, and it's really about creating online interactions in a social way. With everyone has, 5,000 friends now online, and they probably haven't met, 2/3 of them. But for me, service networking was really about utilizing technology to make real connections in the real world to help real people get real things done. I think that's exactly what we've built with TaskRabbit. The fact that you can go on TaskRabbit, you can see who's in your neighborhood, you can look at their profiles, their ratings, their reviews, their reputation. You can understand why you would trust that person to deliver your groceries or to hang a picture on your wall is something that you didn't have access to as far as information goes before.
So some might think it ironic that an online service actually brings you closer to knowing your neighbors than you might have otherwise.
A decade ago, there was probably a kid in your neighborhood who you could have wash your car or mow your lawn. But I actually think with the age of the internet ended up siloing us a bit. It made things anonymous. It made things untransparent. And so we're bringing that transparency back. We're bringing that identity back to the internet in a way that allows people to trust each other again.
Dance and computer science seem pretty disparate from each other, but do you see any connective tissue between the two?
I do. I mean, I think particularly with ballet, the movement is so specific and so precise. And with computer science, with mathematics, with programming, it's the preciseness and the discipline around that that makes great programs. All of these things, math and computer science and dance, have all made me into the entrepreneur I am today. And it's definitely this sense of discipline that I have around everything that I do that I think has helped get us this far.
I've heard you say before that you've always been obsessed with efficiency mm-hmm. also. And TaskRabbit, the goal of TaskRabbit is improving efficiency in one's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also true. I mean, I remember when I was at Sweetbriar, my friends would make fun of me because I'd always take a very specific route to my classes. And it was always the straightest route because I would say, well, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. But I think that efficiency just has always been a part of my life, has always driven how I think about things, even mundane things about, you know, how I'm going to walk to my next class or where I'm going to walk to get lunch. And so that efficiency piece, I think, is a big part of TaskRabbit's DNA as well.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Leah Buskey, founder of TaskRabbit. Coming up, we'll meet Alexa Hirschfeld, co-founder of Paperless Post. I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. My guest is Alexa Hirschfeld, co-founder of Paperless Post, a web-based company that sends digital invitations. Users can choose all the design elements of a card, ranging from font to color, pattern, size, and Paperless Post has delivered more than 60 million invitations and cards since its inception in 2009. Alexa started the company when she was 23 years old with her younger brother, James. Welcome.
Thank you.
How would you describe what Paperless Post is?
Paperless Post it's a website that you go to and you can design anything that you'd buy in a brick and mortar stationery store, except that you send it all online. Once you've designed it, you put in your recipients' names and email addresses. When you send it to them, they receive it in their inbox and you can track their RSVPs. And I think the key difference between us and other online invitation companies is that it really looks like what you'd buy in a brick-and-mortar stationery store, from the texture of the paper stock that the invitation appears to be printed on to the envelope with the receiver's name on it that shows up in their inbox and the animation for the more formal cards.
You co-founded the company with your brother, James. How did the idea for the company originate?
It was the result of a series of conversations that James and I had had about various things that we wanted to do together. In the beginning, it was that we wanted to work together on a movie, on a film. So he would be the director and I would be the writer and producer. And then I had an idea for another company where it also involved the internet and a mass customization tool where people would design their own suits and they would get made in Vietnam and in Hoi An and then get sent to the U.S., Neither one of those panned out, but we kept talking, and James called me one day and had this idea. He said, you know, I think that if this were available, people would use it, and I think that they'd probably pay for it, too. I remember responding and saying, I think that you're right that people would use it. I don't know whether they'd pay for it, but I think that we should do it.
Your brother was at Harvard, where you also had graduated from. Do you know how he came up with this idea at the time?
He was actually planning a birthday party for himself. It was his 21st birthday. He'd ordered palm trees, little mini palm trees for $5 each, and printed cups that said Beach Club. You know, it was in the middle of winter, but they said it said Beach Club on them. But then when it came around to actually inviting people to the party, he really didn't have very many options because it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks away, and he didn't have people's home addresses, and he didn't really have enough money to spend on printing invitations. But at the same time, he didn't want to use Evite or email, which wouldn't express how cool he knew the party would be. So it was actually out of his own experience that he came up with the idea of paperless post.
What were you doing at the time that also was leading you in the direction of wanting to start an online business?
There are a lot of other thoughts that went into doing this kind of company. One of them is that I was working at an older media company, and I was noticing the difficulties that they were having monetizing their content online. It seemed like a really, really big, scary thing for a lot of people and an opportunity for young people who were looking for an opportunity to be creative and solve a problem that the world needed.
You mentioned you had been working for a traditional older media company. That's CBS. You were Katie Couric's assistant.
Yes.
How did you get that job?
I had worked with her at the Olympics in Athens in 2004. And the reason I got that job was because I speak Greek and read and write Greek because my mom's family is Greek American. So it was all very roundabout how I ended up there.
And when you were at CBS, you did receive a lot of invitations in the mail. Did that influence your thinking that, you know what, maybe this could work?
We did receive a lot of invitations at CBS for Katie. One of the interesting things was that if people were trying to follow up, they would always do it by email. So it meant that essentially for any invitation, there also had to be a digital version. So all of a sudden, it seemed as though the print version was sort of a formality.
Your brother was very specific about his idea, and he is somewhat of an artist. What is his background in the artistic area?
He's entirely self-taught in terms of visual design and graphic design. His entire life, he's been practicing art. So he was a photographer, he was a painter, coin collector, stamp collector, sculptor. And I remember seeing other people's reaction to the things that he would make. And it would be things that he would make in his room. But I remember seeing my mother's friends at our house and always having the same kind of reaction, being impressed. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I also thought about when he was telling me about this idea.
Your mom is from Greece.
From Greece via Pennsylvania.
Okay. And how about your father?
My father's from New York City.
What did your parents do? What do your parents do?
My parents are both lawyers. Mm. And my dad now practices real estate. And my mom is actually a in-house counsel at Paperless Post.
You mentioned that your mom is Greek and that you speak Greek. Do you speak any other languages?
Yeah, languages were the thing that I was that made me most interested in school initially. So I speak and read and write modern Greek, and I speak Spanish, and I also know Latin and ancient Greek as well from school.
How do you think that's informed any of this?
I think it's informed a lot of it because I am really interested in the programming languages that we use, and I've learned enough about each of them to understand what I need to know about how they're used, and that makes my job really fun.
When you say programming languages, you're talking about computer programming languages, the plumbing that goes on behind what you see.
That's right. It's what makes it all work.
Because ultimately, it seems like, as well as being a design-oriented company, Paperless Post is a technology company.
Yeah, and more of that, half the people that work at Paperless Post are software developers.
You were 23 years old when you launched the company, and your brother was 21. How did that help or hurt?
So somebody told us once that one of the things you learn when you start a company is that everything that you think is going to be easy is really hard and takes a really long time, and everything that you think is going to be hard is really hard and takes a really long time. And one of the benefits to being a really young person with very little experience when you start a company is that you really do not have much fear about what's going to go into it, and you have the energy to stay up all night, and you have the fearlessness to write somebody that's more senior than you and ask them to work at your company.
Who was one of the people you wrote letters to, senior executives?
I think it wasn't as much senior executives. Mm-hmm. It was more people that knew things that we didn't know, like very, very good software developers. There's a very important technical culture at our company, and that was really founded and cultivated by Aaron Quint, who is our CTO. And in the beginning, he contracted with Paperless Post, and he really wasn't going to come on and work full-time because he had a really great career contracting. And so hiring people that were really different from us and not being scared to ask them to come work with us, and the fact that we were all young, he's also my age, was definitely a benefit in terms of building the company.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Alexa Hirschfeld, co-founder of Paperless Post, a web-based company that enables users to email custom-made stationery that wouldn't typically be sent over the internet. Users range from individuals to institutions like the Metropolitan Museum of Art or the National Gallery. So you had this moment where you thought, okay, we're gonna give this a try. Your brother was still in college, and you were still working as Katie Couric's assistant. What happened then?
What happened was that it was a process of working backwards from the end product that James had defined, the unit of which was a card that was customized. We worked backwards to understand how you would have that be sent over the internet. We quickly realized that it would be via a design process that a user would be in control of, which meant that we needed to create a tool online that would enable a user to create that end product. On nights and weekends, we would meet with a lot of different people, and we would also spend a lot of alone time in our parents' house, or when he was at school and I was living in my parents' house, laying out and designing what we could do. And for him, that was the card and the cards and the format of the end product. And for me, it was the user interface that would enable users to design those cards.
How did you raise capital in the early days? And how much capital did you need early on if it was just you and your brother?
We didn't raise capital until we launched in 2009. We were able to raise capital because we had traction, because we had users, not because we were telling a story about a future when we would have a product and have users.
Once you launched the site, what were the first invitations you sent out, and how did you get traction initially?
Well, we never sent out invitations. So what happened was that there were people that knew what we were doing and asked us when they could use it. And so I had said to a friend that she could use it by September 30th, and she kept bugging me about using it. She kept bugging me, and finally I gave her a password, and I didn't think she'd be able to use the product or navigate through it. And then she gave me a call a few hours later, and she said, "So did you see what I made?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "No, I didn't see what you made." And she said, Well, can you just go on the site and log on and look at this invitation? Do you like the font color I chose? Do you like the font I chose? Do you like this? I thought it was really great that I chose that champagne bottle. And so she ended up sending that invitation to, 200 or 220 people. And honestly, there is no other way to describe how people started using Paperless Post other than that party.
What was the party for?
For her 22nd birthday.
One of your board members is Ram Shriram, who was an early investor in Google. How did you meet him?
We actually didn't meet Ram personally. He received an invitation or multiple invitations, and so he ended up going to the homepage of Paperless Post and reading about the About Us, and then maybe doing a little more Googling about us, and then wrote us a really warm email to our help email. We wrote him back, and we ended up having breakfast with him in New York City.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Alexa Hirschfeld, co-founder of Paperless Post, a web-based company that sends digital stationery.
Paperless Post makes money by selling virtual coins for customizing its cards, and the company became profitable in 2010. Your chief operating officer, Lucy Grayson, helped you define the strategy and the business model for the company. How exactly was she helpful, and how do you make money?
I'd say she's been extremely helpful because she came in and helped us define who we were as a business, not just as a product. By her asking, we had to think really hard about how were we going to make money, and a lot of the options didn't fit with the product we'd created because having ads would have meant interjecting between two people's communication. My brother made the comment in a New York Times article that you would never have a flyer in a wedding invitation, so why would you have an ad on an online wedding invitation? And by April of 2009, we'd deployed a direct-to-consumer payment model. So I credit Lucy's involvement greatly with our self-definition as a business.
What were some stumbling blocks for you in the early days? You were fortunate in that you had a clear concept for the company and that you got traction pretty immediately. What was harder for you than you thought?
Every business that you create, there's also a lot of things that happen behind the scenes. We did learn along the way that there were a lot of other things a business required to succeed, such as email deliverability, which is one of the most detail-oriented and difficult sets of rules to learn. But James somehow became our in-house email deliverability expert
guru.
I remember Lucy saying early on when James was on a call about email deliverability, she was like, "Thank you for caring so much." And it was true. It's just out of pure care to learn something like email deliverability. And a lot of things that are not pretty go into creating an actual company.
Paperless Post offers a platform for design partners, ranging from large companies like Crane and Boltman Geller to boutique stationers. But it wasn't always that way. You didn't always have these outsourcing design partners. What were some of the first designs that you and your brother came up with?
One of the first one was called Saint-Germain, and it was a cream rectangular invitation that had a gold bevel and rounded corners, and it just had a simple script font, and it was extremely formal and actually probably not financially viable to send with paper, but that and a few other invitations, one had a silk black ribbon, and it was sort of a shimmery silver paper stock. That was also very popular. Basically, we started out with this line that was extremely formal, and the interesting thing was that when users saw Paperless Post in the beginning, they just felt that that meant that they could use us for formal things, so they started using us for things like, you know, engagement parties or rehearsal dinners and later on actual weddings. And that wasn't really a core part of our plan, but it was amazing that that happened as a result of the type of cards that we originally started with.
You mentioned, you know, silk shimmery paper stock and liners. Now, we have to remember this is all virtual. What are some other designs you came up with?
One of the famous cards that we started out with was red, and it had black and white zebras jumping across the border, and it was based off of a wallpaper at an Italian restaurant in Midtown called Gino's, which I think is sadly now closed.
On Lexington Avenue in New York City. Paperless Post is effectively making stationery more affordable using a digital medium. For instance, you have a calligrapher named Bernard Meisner, who in the real world, his artwork and his actual cards are very expensive.
Bernard Meisner is one of the best calligraphers in the world. One of the wonderful things about having these design partners was that we could have people like Bernard Meisner, whose cards are normally at the mid-range, $6 per item, allow that type of design to be accessed by people who would not otherwise be able to afford to use it. And basically the reason for that is that we are only offering the design itself and the visual quality and not the cost of producing it in physical form.
When you mentioned $6 per item, do you mean per letter?
Yes.
Who is another artist, designer, that's offered on the site whom you particularly like?
Mr. Boddington is a line that is on Paperless Post. It's a sub-brand of Mr. Boddington, which is an offline artisanal stationer in New York City. The sub-brand is Mr. Boddington's Nephew, and it's been incredibly popular.
What does it look like?
It is colorful. It's witty. There's often hand-driven fonts on the cards, and it has its own very distinctive brand. There are colors that are regularly used, like pink and yellow and orange, and you know that it's Mr. Boddington when you see it. It's a really great sort of auger for the future of these design partnerships that we have, because we're actually being able to share a lot of revenue with these really talented designers and offer them a platform to get exposure to lots of visitors.
What was the last invitation you sent?
The last invitation I sent was a Chinese New Year invitation. It was for a dinner party that I'm having tonight. And it was on a card that looks like a gold coin, and it flips, and then there is sort of a witty joke, and then an invitation to dinner at 9.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Alexa Hirschfeld, co-founder of Paperless Post. If you'd like to learn more about the show, please visit our website at fromscratchradio.com or follow us on Twitter at Jess G. Harris or find us on Facebook. Our website is fromscratchradio.org. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch.